you get to experience a lot of things at once. And early on, I got to figure out what I really liked and what I didn't like.
A Pinch of Wisdom? Ooh, that sounds like a new podcast. A Pinch of Wisdom.
You're listening to the CG Spectrum Podcast. CG Spectrum College of Digital Art and Animation offers specialized career training for the film and game sector. Join our hosts, Career Development Manager Maxine Schnepp and CGS Mentor Justin Mulman, as they chat with industry experts doing cutting-edge work in film and games. Now, on to the show.
Hey, Maxine. So I get to talk to a former student of mine from back in the day. His name is Daniel Pinch, who's also a CG Spectrum mentor. He's focusing on game design. He's worked on several games, but most recently World of Tanks, and currently he's over at Airship Syndicate making some new secret PlayStation 5 content.
That's awesome. I can't wait to hear about this whole coming full circle thing.
Yeah, I'm just going to have him tell me how good of a teacher I was.
Perfect.
Today we're going to be talking with senior game designer Daniel Pinch, a.k.a. Pinch.
Yep.
How are you doing, Daniel?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking. I like your beard.
Thank you. It's getting a little unruly right now because of the winter, but that's why it's here. It's so dang cold in Chicago.
Or is it just because it's the constant work from home where we just kind of experiment with our facial?
It's just after, every time after Christmas and like New Year's, after I'm done seeing like family and friends that I should look super, you know, nice for, they don't think I'm homeless half the time. And it's always super windy in Chicago. I'm like, well, I might as well have it up until it gets a little warmer.
Right?
So,
well, people always would be like, why, whenever I travel places, like, why are you wearing a hat? Have you ever tried to just walk around with normal hair unless you have it gelled back?
Yeah,
or
exactly.
In Chicago, it's not worth
it.
Plus, when you work in games or anything creative, you can wear whatever you want. I don't own any nice clothes anymore. And I can't remember the last time I wore something nice. Just because as long as I've been working in games. Speaking of working in games, why don't you tell us about your background?
Yeah, so I've been in the games for almost 7 years now, in the games industry, that is.
Oh my God, I feel old.
Yeah, we both should at this point. I graduated from Tribeca Flashpoint College here in Chicago in 2015, where Justin was actually one of my professors at the time. Obviously, you've kind of become one of my mentors since then and during college. But after college, I worked at a studio here in Chicago for a couple of months called Phosphor. I shipped a pair of games for the Heroes Reborn hit NBC TV series, which had one season and then went away. But the games were a really great learning experience because I got to jump in, you know, feet first, head first, whatever you want to say, directly onto two projects simultaneously that were pretty much towards the end of their production cycle. So I met a lot of contacts. Once my contract ran up and those games shipped, a lot of people recommended me over to High Voltage Software, which is where I was for almost 2 years. I worked up in the Chicago office for a full year, and then I worked in the New Orleans office for about 9 months, almost a full year.
God, about that they had that.
Yeah, it was weird. It was
crazy, yeah.
It was interesting.
Do we still have that?
They do, yeah. It's still down there.
So it's because of tax breaks, right, or something?
It's because of tax breaks, yeah. After we shipped Damage Core, the game I was working on there, first-person shooter for the Oculus Rift, the creative director was like, yeah, we really liked you. We want to keep you on for the next project that we're having, but you have to move to New Orleans because it's a big tax break down there. So I was down in New Orleans for about a year, and the project I was on wasn't necessarily going in some places I wanted, and our publisher kind of backed out at a certain point. So I started looking for some jobs just because it felt like we might have had layoffs at High Voltage. So I actually came back to Chicago and worked at Phosphor for a couple of months, only to get laid off anyways because the exact same situation happened because our publisher literally collapsed and we had to...
That was the one. I can't say which project it was, but I was helping out on that project.
Yeah, that's the one. Yep. Yeah, it was unfortunate. Yeah. But it got me to Wargaming, where I was there for 3 years working on site here in Chicago, and ultimately led me to where I am now at Airship Syndicate, working remotely. I've been here for almost a year.
How do you like it?
Airship? I really like it a lot. It feels similar to Phosphor in the sense that it's a lot of like really talented, highly passionate people, but with a lot of bit more stability is the one thing about Phosphor. That was the main negative that I have experiencing it. Talking to other people who worked there was, it was, you know, your job was constantly in flux almost depending on the project. And that certainly happened to me.
Well, another thing that's kind of fun is that I worked at Phosphor. I did contract jobs at Phosphor too.
Right.
And I always really enjoyed the team, but I always felt, I was like, all right, what's happening? And that's why I'm super happy that now they merged in with People Can Fly Studios. So hopefully they can just give that team the runway it needs to make some really cool stuff. So when you're at Wargaming, so for the people who are listening, Chicago doesn't have a huge gaming industry, and the gaming industry that it does have really stemmed from Midway Games back in the 90s when Mortal Kombat became big and NBA Jam and all those arcade games became big. They eventually transitioned to consoles. And it was difficult to take arcade games and transition to consoles. Some were a success, some were not. It's interesting because you think about these studio, like these cities that have these big industries wrapped around them. And Chicago's traditionally known for like marketing, advertising, and architecture, not games. Right. But we've managed to stay there for a while and hit them all. I feel like you should get a punch card. And I'm curious to get your take on it because I think we talked about this when I was your teacher. How you handle yourself is really huge because you don't know who you're going to work with again. And you just noted you go back to studios. So if you left that studio or if you had the reputation of being like an ass, then no one's going to want to work with you again. That's why ultimately I feel like studios, like especially for someone who's new in the industry, like High Voltage and Phosphor. They aren't the traditional AAA big studio franchise. You don't have to really worry about your job. It is more of a rough and tumble. They're out there. Right. They're independent. They're trying to get work. And so you kind of have to wear multiple hats. So how did that really kind of work for you in entering those types of studios as opposed to what you're doing now? Or has it changed at all with you? Because you have to do, you're not just doing game design. I feel like you're doing everything when you're at those studios.
Yeah, you do kind of do a bit of everything. And it's interesting because now I've been on both sides of that coin. You're absolutely correct. At Phosphor and High Voltage, on one project, you might just be starting out as a level designer. But then once you start putting gameplay in, you're now doing like systems design and character design, things like that. Like when I was at, I first started at Phosphor, I was just brought on as like a junior contractor to like fix bugs and put like, you know, subtitles into the game and things like that. And I got through that really, really quickly because I knew Unreal and was confident in my abilities. You know, some of the leads there saw my abilities and were like, okay, why don't you fix up some like level design for this level that needs it? Why don't you put some combat in here? I started working with the animation team to actually put cinematics in the game, which is really awesome. That's something I really liked when I was in college, was kind of just messing around with like Sequencer and Matinee and Unreal 4. And I told them, hey, I'm really interested in this. And they're like, oh, cool. Why don't you just work with, you know, the lead animator to figure out how to get these things working in game and progressing from scene to scene and then getting gameplay involved and then going to a new cinematic, things like that. So it really is, you get to experience a lot of things at once. And early on, I got to figure out what I really liked and what I didn't like in a professional setting, which was great. You know, I really gravitated more towards blueprints and scripts, setting up gameplay or systems versus more level design. I wasn't just stuck doing, you know, one thing all the time at those studios. Whereas when I moved to Wargaming, it was a little the opposite, where I was just a systems designer. I didn't always have an opportunity to kind of try out level design or move over to, you know, things that were a little bit more interesting to me. It was a little more rigid in that structure. We were a much bigger company than Phosphor, High Voltage ever was, right? We had like 150 to 200 people.
Is Airship allow you that flexibility?
They do.
Or is it more?
Right. I can't talk about what I'm doing right now, but
how big are they?
We actually employ people across the entire globe, which is awesome. We have like 65 people, I want to say, right now. So we're a pretty good mid-sized company, I'd say.
That's a good size studio. Yeah. But I feel like with a studio that size, it allows for like you to change direction if you need to. It's easier to steer something and make a quick turn, whereas like World of Tanks and Wargaming, like a decision has to go
there's a lot of people above the people that you're talking to that have to kind of be involved in those decisions.
When you were in school, when we were together, Is this something that you thought you'd be doing in terms of not maybe working with Unreal, but wanting to work on the design aspect? Or how did you arrive to wanting to do that?
So I knew that I wanted to work on video games and make video games since I was a kid. I think a lot of kids feel that way, right? They're playing video games. Like, this is cool. I want to do it. Like, I really knew that I wanted to do this. And my parents were really supportive. And my grandparents were like, they were helping me find schools and things like that. But right, early on, I wasn't sure if I wanted to be a programmer on games or a designer. Right. Like I obviously programmers have easier time to find jobs. Theoretically, they get paid more, things like that. But I wasn't confident in my abilities to, you know, learn C++ and figure out how to do complex systems. So that's why I ultimately took the design course in at Tribeca. And I'm really happy I did because I like the creative freedom that I have to, you know, work with engineers, artists, you know, the entire team on to accomplish the features that we're working on.
I'm glad that you were able to. The one thing that was nice is be able to get you into Unreal, because it's definitely something that, you know, when I was in school, it was no game school.
Right.
It wasn't any access to all that stuff. It was totally different. I thought what was really fun out of the people that were in the group, great students. I like them all. I think we had a good bunch. It was a small, but I felt like you had the most patience and the most desire to really break something apart and understand why it's working a certain way. And you were more open to accepting that things aren't going to be straightforward. Like, hey, this isn't going to work right away. All right, I have to try multiple times to make something happen. And it does, like with all practice, I mean, you can't walk onto a basketball court and be like the next right. Michael Jordan. You have to practice. You got that. Whereas the biggest issue I see with a lot of students coming in, which is unfortunate, is that they don't have, they think that the love of games, or they think that maybe they're good at drawing a certain thing, that will take them a long way. It's like, no, it really comes down to your personality and how much drive and passion you have, plus communication. Right. And the one thing that you always did consistently is that if I either challenged you or asked you to do something, you did it. Which was like, oh, cool. We'll right. try this next, do this. And not only did you do it, every single time you worked at a specific studio, there's people had nothing but great things to say about you, specifically on your personality. And I think that's something that people often overlook. They will just say, well, I like to play games. I'm an introvert. This is just how I am. Like, that's great. And this isn't the industry right. for you then. Maybe you should just keep on playing games. And there's nothing wrong with that. But it is really, really is important to be front facing and to take advantage of situations. And I think you really did take advantage of that with me in a yeah. good way. If I offered information, you're like, oh, you would actually take me up on that. And your relationship with me at that point reminded me of when I was in college and I had an instructor, just one instructor, which literally was like for you, Brian McRae, and he worked at High Voltage. And he got me the job at High Voltage. Then he went to Midway. He right. got the job at Midway. And then he went to Blizzard and all that stuff. But for that, he told me exactly how it was. Some people didn't like him because they thought he was blunt. But I was like, no, he's telling me exactly what I want to know. So why wouldn't I not listen to him? So I tried to do that approach with all students. And sadly, it doesn't come across right. sometimes. But it worked for you.
And like that's something – that whole philosophy that you had with me years ago is something that I still do. Like I try to pass along to my students, and you're absolutely correct in that you can have these technical skill sets and things like that. But if you're not a person, if you don't have a good personality, if you're not fun to work with, if you're always like negative or not really, you know, trying to figure out what's the next thing you can do to achieve something that's good in the game you're working on, or to learn a new skill set or improve yeah. yourself, it's certainly going to be a much more difficult time to get in the industry. So that's something I tell my students at CG Spectrum is, you know, you're going to learn a lot of things while you're here, but you also have to be open to getting feedback that might feel harsh, but it's not directed at you as a person. It's just your work needs to improve in this direction. Yeah. Or, you know, you'd be willing to talk to other students and me about things you're having problems with, and willing to go and research extra things outside of your class time, but just me, to figure out how to push yourself forward. And realizing that, you know, when you're in a game studio, you're constantly talking to other departments of the design team, right? Like, you know, they'll talk to a VFX artist about what you yeah. need for the feature you're working on. Then you go talk to a level designer to put that VFX into the level. And then you'll talk to a programmer to make sure everything's working correctly. And as long as you have a good forward-facing personality and you can communicate what you're thinking about effectively, then you'll have no issues, really.
Yeah, I think that's, in the end of the day, it is a teamwork yeah. thing. And even education, it's a teamwork thing. You have to have that. There has to be communication both ways. And I think you did a really great job communicating both ways. Like, you let me know when you were frustrated right. with something. And I think students need to do that with their schools and their teachers. It can't just be waiting till the very end when you're like, we're doing student evaluations. Well, negative. No, if you have things that you like, I like to learn like that, because everyone learns differently and everyone communicates differently. But I feel like, you know, I've worked specifically, I can think about when I was working at Phosphor, I did a stint there, and there was someone that I had used to work with at a different studio. And I liked this person, but this person's energy was just like intense. And I just said right off the bat to avoid any awkward stuff. And I was like, listen, I'm just here to work. We can chit chat and like talk later. But during here, I just need to focus and get this right. stuff done. And there's nothing. And the person was completely fine with it. Whereas sometimes people will like hold things in and it bubbles over and then it affects their work performance. And then people are looking at like, you have a negative attitude or a chip on your shoulder. And if you give me a student or a junior artist or anyone that has at least that passion and that excitement and tenacity, you can train them what to do. And they have to be like, and working at studios like Airship and Phosphor and High Voltage, for example, it's different than Word Gaming because you have to have, like, after you get done with your tasks, you have to be like, well, can I help you? Well, I don't know how to do it, but if you show me, I can learn.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you think, you know, getting into the industry when you were trying to like go from Tribeca into Phosphor for the first time, and even from Phosphor to the High Voltage and these other ones, what was the challenge for you as a designer? Because I feel like a lot of times when people are designers, they don't know what to show in their portfolio. Right. They don't know how to, like, how do I visually represent what I can and can't do, and that I can do everything that they're asking for in these bullet points for the jobs section?
Yeah, I think one thing that students need to kind of understand, or anybody trying to get in the industry, is your portfolio should have a lot of quality pieces and not go for quantity, right? If you have one really good project that is outstanding versus, you know, two to three that kind of have bits and bobs that are good, but the rest of it doesn't kind of reach the potential it should, you don't necessarily want to go that route. So that's kind of what I did at the end of Tribeca, was I looked at all the stuff that I worked on. I looked at all the things that drove my skill set forward, and I only put one project on my portfolio showcasing, like, this is what my skill set is. Here's all the blueprints I made. Here's screenshots and videos of these things working together with the team that I worked with. And that helped get me into a job at Phosphor, because a lot of the things that I did there were things that we needed to do for the games that I worked on. So like collectibles that you pick up and interact with and are stored in like an inventory, different like achievements that I had added to the game that I worked on at Tribeca that ultimately I ended up working on on the Heroes Reborn game as well. I implemented some achievements there too, which was interesting. And a lot of the cinematics that I made, just like small things of, you know, objects moving in the environment and the player kind of dynamically moving around and things are happening. They really like that stuff as well. So it worked out really well there in that instance. And, you know, a lot of my students want to always change projects at CG Spectrum. And I kind of tell them, hey, it might be more beneficial to take your project from term one and polish it, add more gameplay to it for term two. And by the time you're done, you'll have this really solid piece of work by the time you graduate here. And the students who have done that have really good portfolios and it looks great. The other thing that I like to tell students as well is if you have the time to work on a side project, a really small one, that would help you stand out from, you know, a lot of people who are entering the industry as well. I know when we were interviewing people at Wargaming, we like to see a lot of people who had all their classwork done, obviously, and did well after in their college studies. But anybody who had like a personal project that they worked on where they took the skills that they learned in college and applied it to something they're passionate about, that's the stuff I wanted to ask about. You know, why did you go out and make this title? Yeah. What made you passionate about it? Versus, you know, the student who just kind of did what they had to do in order to graduate and then apply with those types of tactics. In hindsight, I kind of wish I did that as well. I didn't have a personal project that I put in my portfolio when I graduated. It worked out for me, but I definitely would if that exact same scenario happened. If I graduated today, I would have a personal project as well.
Yeah, because I feel like, you know, you do have to kind of have two things. And you said something that was actually spot on. It's students having new ideas and stopping a project and starting something new. You will never be able to identify where you sit, like, progression wise, if you don't finish a project all the way through. And I see that happen with students a lot, and even professionals. And, you know, I've done that so many times where I just get bored and
right.
But it is harder. And the projects that you can actually see fully through it and do a little post-mortem or like a little review of like what worked, what didn't work, it allows you to show growth, but and then you can have measured growth. Like, that's what I did last time. All right, well, I'm going to do something new and compare them and just see how you keep growing. And eventually, you know, if you make projects that are more bite-sized and not these huge things, you can do more and you can tackle more and you can, like, grow as a designer, an artist, and developer.
Hey, everyone. Quick shout out to CG Spectrum for helping make this podcast happen.
CG Spectrum is an online animation, VFX, digital painting, and game development school that prepares you for a career in film and games. Whether you're just starting out or you're upgrading your skills, get personalized career training and mentorship from industry pros who have worked on blockbuster films and best-selling games. Courses are 100% online, and you can choose from one-on-one private mentorship options or group classes with just 4 students max. You'll also get access to career support services and join an awesome community full of like-minded creatives just like you. Learn more at cgspectrum.com. We're bringing the industry to you.
So at what point did you like when you jumped from school to working in a studio, what were the biggest things that you noticed, like learning wise, like, you know, there's only so much that I could have taught you and that the school right. could have taught you, as opposed to like, hey, throw it out in the water, now you have to swim. Like, are you just thrown into the deep end? Like, or did they give you like a little 90-day work period to like ramp up? Or, cause I feel like your initial contract with Phosphor is pretty short. So yeah. I feel like they like give you like a week to get ramped
yeah,
up.
Yeah, it was what? Really fast at Phosphor. That was the biggest shock for me. Cause we were shipping those games within a couple of months. They were supposed to ship when the series premiered on NBC, but that didn't end up happening. And they shipped a couple of months after, but I mean, we were kind of in fire when the games were, so they really wanted me to come on and fix a lot of bugs quickly, start with those minor things. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the ramp up process they had, was, okay, well, he can tackle these minor bugs that we need to fix, but, you know, we can't have our like main systems designer working on all these bug fixes. He needs to finalize the major systems.
Makes sense.
So
you're back and cleaning up.
Yeah. I was going back and cleaning up everything. Yeah. And I remember, the lead producer on the project, he was kind of the person walking me through a lot of the things, like, here's how you properly use, you know, Perforce in our specific ways, you know, how our check-in processes are, like what, you know, very detailed things, like here's what you should put for, you know, a bug fix in the check-in log, things like that. How to use, I think we were using Jira or something. I don't remember exactly what software we're using, but so just getting familiar with those types of pieces of software, because obviously you talked about how those are things we'll have to get used to when we get to the industry. You know, different companies use different pieces of software to, you know, track bugs and write documents. So kind of learning how all those things, those processes work, was initially the biggest hurdle to overcome, and just keeping like a mental checklist of, you know, okay, I need to do this, then I can submit, then I'm good to go. I can get feedback from this person. But then, you know, at a place like Wargaming, it was a much slower ramp on process because the game's already out. Nothing was on fire. We're putting out DLC and content expansions, things like that. So there was a much longer time.
It's a little bit of a shock, isn't it? Like when you, that happened to me a couple of times where I'd go from like a smaller studio to a bigger studio, like, and it was like, wait, what? Yeah. They're like, don't worry about it. Take your time. And I was like, what? You get so used to like, when I went from High Voltage to Midway, because I went from that to the Mortal Kombat team, and they're like, take your time. And I was like, I thought that they were messing with me. And I was like, no, they're just joking. But it was, exactly. You just, like, it's an established franchise. You're not trying to, like, oh, it's Mortal Kombat. Right. Like, it's not like, we don't know if it's going to sell. We got to push it out. So it was very much a different thing, because that's what I was doing at High Voltage, too, was just a lot of licensed content for, like, shows and movies. And then they always wanted to push things out during specific releases. Like, and then you have to worry about, I don't know if you had to worry about this for the Heroes one, there's probably some producer on the side of the actual TV show that's trying to make sure everything's running good for them, on top of dealing with internal producers. So there's a lot of checks and balances.
There was weird feedback from them at times. I remember specifically, there was like a scene where the main character goes into like a high school gymnasium, and we just had like static mesh bouncy balls that someone added like a physics property to, so they'd bounce around. Because our game was all about using like force powers to throw things around. And their main feedback after reviewing the entire level was the basketballs didn't bounce accurately. And we're like, this cannot be the only feedback you have for us today. Like, this is like, we need actual tangible things. So we ended up just cutting the basketballs.
It totally ruined the whole immersion for me.
Yeah, they were like really weird about it. Like, they had a lot of feedback about the basketballs and how they need to look right because it's the first level and people know what a basketball is. Yeah. But yeah, I was just like, oh, that's interesting that we're going into this very ancillary thing versus, you know, actual gameplay. But
so how do you think that, like, because I think that's something I've like, we talked about, I believe, in class and just in general is, again, this comes back to your personality, especially as a game designer. I'd imagine, you know, as an artist, it's just like a designer. You have to kind of be loose and flexible, right? Because I've had so many times where I was working for projects where people come in with like weird requests and you're just like, that makes no sense.
Yeah.
Or like last minute requests. They're like, really, you want to do this now when we're going to be making a build to send to the milestone in like 24 hours.
Right.
And you, to me, the only way that I justified it was sometimes I'd push back and I'd ask myself, is this my career or my job? And if it was a studio that I like liked, but I wasn't going to be like, I'm not be here forever, I'd just be like, all right, cool, you're in charge. But if it was a studio that I was passionate about, I would push back and be like, that's not right. Like, you shouldn't do this. And it's kind of like knowing when to pick and choose your battles, because
I mean, at High Voltage, that was, I was very passionate about that. Everybody was really passionate about Damage Core we were working on. It was a really fun process. Really difficult because I never worked on a VR game, obviously, and the studio never worked on one. So a lot of learning pains. But there were a lot of things that came from, you know, Oculus and what their expectations were for the title and like boss battles and like redesigning a lot of content to fit what they saw the vision of the game was. And yeah. I remember there was a specific point in time when they came back on a level that I was working on, and one of my other Exeter mentor who works at Insomniac now, we were kind of working on the content.
Who was it?
Darius Salary.
I remember Darius.
Yeah, he's awesome. I love him. Yeah, we were, he was kind of the lead on that level, and I was doing a lot of gameplay. He was doing the level design. I was putting gameplay into the level, and they really didn't like what we had. They had a lot of negative feedback, and him and I just sat down and we're like, all right, let's take a look at each piece of feedback note by note and walk through and try to think like what they're seeing for the full vision of the title and what we can push back on and what we can't. Like you said, we chose very specific things to push back on of like, no, once we have the full version of this mechanic, it'll work really well. Whereas we, you know, kind of we're like, okay, we see what you're saying for this part of the level. We'll redesign it to meet what your expectations are. And I think that compromise is ultimately what made that level better, because there were good points in that, but in their feedback. But for us, we were able to push back and say like, no, we're really passionate about this section. We know we can make it work with the right, you know, once we have it past the prototype that I had in, it'll look like a fully polished section of the level in the game.
So to take away from that, then you think, and I agree with you, that the best way to handle feedback is to not just, you know, you can say no,
yep,
and you can also say yes, I agree, but also follow up with, we disagree, this is why, we agree, this is what we'll do. And I think that's the mature way to do things. And that's also the way that you really start building a strong working relationship, and they'll start respecting your ideas. And that's where the trust comes in. And then they'll have less and less feedback. Or if they do, so I think that's a huge thing that sometimes people don't realize, is that there's a huge, this is why communication is so important, because not only are you a salaried employee that maybe have a dollar amount per hour, so what is everyone else? So these meetings, this miscommunication, these redundant work that has to be done over and over again, that costs a lot of money in a budget, especially if there's like a timeline attached to it. But if you can establish the same like visual language or just language in general and how to communicate and when to do feedback, that saves you so much time and so much back and forth. That, you know, talking about this stuff, what do you like, if you were to give me like the top three skill sets that you think that you are looking for, if you were to hire someone right now as a junior designer at Airship, like what would you like
want? I mean,
keep it high level.
Yeah, whenever I'm interviewing with people in any of the companies I've worked for, I'm looking for their personality and their like work ethic first, right? Like, I really want someone that I can just talk to like we are, essentially. Like I can go to them and be like, hey, this isn't very good. Here's why I think it's not good. What do you think we should do about it? Or vice versa. They can push back on what I'm saying or what I've built. And we can kind of work together as a team to figure out what's the best path forward for the game. And I also want to work with someone who wants to work in the industry, like who knows that this is their career. Yeah. They are, I don't want to say desperate, but they're, you know, they're really gung ho about getting into the industry and they want to make it work. And they can showcase on their portfolio that they have their personal projects. They really want to do this. They're eager to learn. They have that personality. And if I can connect with them in the interview and talk to them about their projects and, you know, kind of push sometimes for devil's advocate in different directions to see how they take feedback from what I'm looking at in their projects and their portfolio, and they respond well to it, that's a really great sign for me. Because I think we mentioned it earlier, you can kind of teach someone a technical skill and anybody can really sit down and learn something. But if they don't have the correct personality or the drive to do it, then you're not going to want to work with that person. So if I sometimes see a lack of a technical skill, but they're really passionate and they're really engaged, they really want to learn, they take feedback well, I'd rather hire that person and teach them how to do something, you know, the way we do it or the skill.
Yeah, because you're always going to have to teach. Like, no studio is the same. Like, you've already been at a handful of studios, right? And like, there's new people to learn, there's new projects to learn, there's new hardware, new software, new like genres of games. But yeah, I don't know about you, but every single time I'd be this is why I developed this a lot to you guys when I was teaching. I try to like just like drum up conversation. Right. I'd always ask. My biggest thing when I'm interviewing someone is I like to ask them, like, what's your favorite shows, your favorite movies?
I ask them as well. I'm a big movie guy, so I always see what their number one is.
I'll slide like little like quotes in there, and like some quotes from Aliens, and if someone gets it, I'm like, oh, and they'll start geeking out. Because I feel like the minute that you geek, like if you disarm someone by finding out what their passions are and they start geeking out on something, then I get excited. If they can get me excited and I get excited about that stuff, yeah, I can see that there's that passion in you. Speaking about that, to break the ice with people you're talking to, when you're not, because working in games, believe it or not, people who are listening or watching, it's not that it's stressing, it can be, but it's draining because you're constantly problem solving. Yeah. And yeah, we're now going outside and like lifting weights and building something like that, but like it just drains you. So what do you do when, like, how do you find that balance now, in terms of, because now you're kind of in my shoes. When I was teaching and working, right, you're teaching and working, so like, so I don't know if you noticed that sometimes I would come into class and I'd be like, oh,
I know, yeah.
So how do you balance that?
I do, yeah. I mean, I still really like playing games, obviously, and not just to like deconstruct them and figure out like, why is God of War from 2018 like, you know, a really good game, right? It's just like, I'll sit down and play this game.
It just is. Exactly. He works out.
Yeah, Kratos is just so built. I mean, but like, besides just playing games, you know, I do a lot of other stuff. I watch a lot of movies and TV, you know, just as like a way to decompress. I've learned, especially honestly, after working at Wargaming, to kind of put my phone on no notifications for work chat after a certain point in time. Because early in my career, when I was really trying to prove myself and make sure, you know, I was keeping people happy, I was constantly on Slack or Microsoft Teams or Skype or whatever we were using to make sure, even way past, you know, 5 p.m. or 6 p.m., I was available. And I just realized I can't do this, right? I can't do this forever. I can't just be available from, you know, 8 a.m. till 8 p.m. every single day to problem solve and do these things. So, you know, being able to establish like, all right, after 7 p.m. or 6 p.m., I'm going to be out, right? Like, I'm not going to check in or connect or anything like that. Really did a lot of wonders for my mental health back then. I was able to focus on, you know, playing video games with my wife, or just playing with my friends and having fun with them, going to see movies. This year I started learning how to bake, because I've always watched like the Great British Baking Show and other like top chefs and stuff. I can't really cook, but I've always loved desserts. So that's my new outlet. But yeah, since we get every other Friday off at Airship, we get paydays off. That's my baking day now. Awesome. So tomorrow I'm going to be baking some cookies as a way to, you know, just decompress. And
I cook every single night. The reason why, I mean, unless I'm lazy, but I just like it because it's the complete opposite of what we're doing on the screen. I can touch it. I can smell it. I can taste it. I can see it. It's like invoking all the senses, as opposed to, you know, and I don't know if you get this way. Sometimes I get this way. I'm like, everything I create is in the ether. Right. It's like, a file can get deleted and it's like, there's a year's worth of work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, so I don't have a lot of artistic capabilities. Like I can't, like every time I log into work, I see something.
Sure you do. I've seen you draw.
Not in a long time. That skill set has regressed while others have gone up. But like I see what like artists are making. Even a lot of the students at CG Spectrum are super talented. I'm like, I want to like make something that looks kind of, you know, artistic, but I also want to not, you know, spend a huge amount of time doing it every single week. So baking is like for like 10 hours a day, every 2 weeks, I just sit down and try to make something that looks good. But if you're watching on the podcast, I'm making these like awkward penguin cookies tomorrow. So
that's awesome.
It's like, it's a little bit easier.
You better better share them on the CGS Slack channel or like on your social or whatever.
Yeah, if they turn out well, then we'll see.
But that's the kind of stuff that's fun. I think, you know, a lot of things that happen when it's good that you're recognizing your limitations. Right. And I think I had a time struggling with that initially when I was at Midway. I just was a yes man to everyone in the Mortal Kombat team because I was like, oh, I'll get to work on this. Yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, I'll do that. And they ultimately took advantage of it. But I think it was on me as well, because if I say I can do a prop in 2 hours and I do it, of course the producer and production team is going to be like, well, just throw more adjusting and we'll give them a time frame of two each, not knowing that like I was like crunching constantly on that. So it's not a sustainable period, but that's on me. And I think the older you get, you learn to value your own time more. And I there's very few times where, I guess it's only when I'm like sick, that I truly, truly unplugged. And I would wake up and then like 2 days later, I was like, I feel amazing. And it wasn't just from like feeling better. It was like, cause you let yourself take a true break. And I'm a sucker for, I'll play games still once in a while, but I'm a sucker for like a good TV show or anything David Fincher does. Or
anything
like
that.
I'm a sucker for like good cinematography, story. And I think that stuff drags the design so much, but also just getting out and walking. Like I already did my walk today, but I walk like at least 5 miles a day. Cause that's where I do all my thinking. And instead of sitting in front of the computer, I'll think about what I have to do and I'll try to piece it together and then sit down and answer the questions for that stuff. But, you know, it's tricky. I'm the same way. Like, even since like all the pandemic stuff, I'm guilty. Like it'll be at night and I'll be like, oh, sometimes some people I'm working with author wise or content wise are up because they're in different times. Right. So I'm like, hey, how you doing? But I have to get better. So usually same thing, like nights I check out like mentally and like I try not to talk. Like after like 8 p.m., I just don't talk to
save
anyone.
Voice.
Save my voice. And then on like Fridays, I usually just use that for catching up and doing more fun experimental stuff. Saturday is just like boosting. Sundays.
Yeah, Sundays are usually like that for me. I just sit in front of the TV or whatever.
And it feels good like to have that balance. And then like, because I feel like your job as a designer, even a developer, whether you're doing games or anything creative, is to solve problems. And if you're not allowing your brain, because if your brain's like a gas tank and you're just constantly, you're not allowing yourself to rest, to fill it up, to watch movies, play games, do experiences, because right. you're interpreting the world around you. It's like, where do you get, like, I guess when you're getting your ideas, are you pulling ideas from like previous experiences, things you've seen and played?
Yeah,
watched,
that's
like,
that's actually something that was really useful at like High Voltage, because I play a lot of games. I have a lot of free time and I had a lot of free time back then as well. So when we were referencing, you know, figuring out how do you come up with a new mechanic or make something fun, you know, I was able to reference a lot of games that were popular then of like, okay, this title is doing this. We want to kind of think about that type of mechanic, or, you know, if someone thinks they have a really original idea and kind of have to break the ice of like, okay, well, they're doing it just so you're aware and they're our main competition, that type of thing. But yeah, I also love watching movies and TV similarly, just because a lot of the stuff that happens there can bleed over into like game design, right? I've kind of always wanted to work on a movie one day as well, which is why I like watching them so much.
I'm the same. So is that like one of your like dream goals? Like what's the next step for you?
The next step for me is I want to be in the industry until I work on a Game of the Year award-winning game. Like I want to be able to say I worked on, you know, a Red Dead Redemption 2 or a GTA 5 or a Last of Us type of game. And the main studio that I would ever really leave Airship for, at least as of right now, would be like Santa Monica Studios. Right? I loved God of War. As a franchise.
He doesn't mean that Airship. He really loves you guys. I am saying.
Any of you are listening right now, or when this goes live, I am not leaving. But that's just kind of like a dream scenario in terms of like, you know, working in that super high level AAA environment and seeing what that's like firsthand.
Yeah.
But yeah, after that, I would love to, you know, with a lot of like previs in Unreal that's happening and a lot of like TV shows and movies, I see an opportunity to learn more like animation and setting that up and kind of working in that part of a film or a TV show, which would be really cool. A way for me to transition my, you know, game design kind of only fits in this one area for right now for me with what I do, but I could transition it to a different career if I want to in the future.
Would you ever transition internally at Airship to more of the cinematic side and then have that be something you leverage for virtual production?
I think so. I mean, if we get to the point in this project or any project where there is a lot of opportunity to work with cinematics, I would really like to be back in that. I love doing it at Foster when I was there, and I did the cinematics as well at High Voltage for Damage Score. It was so much fun working with the animation team and different actors to get mocap done, things like that. And then putting it all into the engine and seeing it come to life and watching the story unfold from point A to point B is super rewarding and really exciting. So I would definitely do that.
How does it feel now? Because we've kept in touch over the years, but like, haven't like had in-depth conversations. So like, how does it feel like you're now 7 years and you've been doing games for this long and now you're kind of like where I was mentoring and teaching you? How does it feel? Feel good?
I mean, it definitely feels good. It still feels a little surreal that I'm like mentoring. You know, I've been at CG Spectrum for since like October 2020, and it's still crazy to me that I've reached this point in my career, because you know, there's some cynical people that I've met in the industry who are looked down in the industry, and many of them aren't in it anymore, which is good for them. But I remember something Darius told me when I first started at Foster. He's like, he called me Pinch as well. He told me, Pinch, you'll know if this is like your actual career, or if you're going to end up leaving, if you're still here after, you know, 5 to 7 years, right? That's when a lot of people get out of the honeymoon phase of like, oh, I get to work on games, and they see, you know, they encounter problems with studios or projects or timelines. That stuff builds up, or are you going to be someone who pushes past all those problems and figure out how to overcome them and continue to make this something that you really like to do and not just something you do for money, right? So this is still something I knew I was going to do since I was a kid, and I see myself doing for a very long time. And since I like movies so much, that's the only reason why I would ever leave. Not because I hate the industry. I still love it, but just because it seems like something that's adjacent that I could kind of work on.
And I feel like it's something you can actually go back and forth. And that's the nice thing. As long as you are working at these studios, you're doing a good job and you're leaving on the right terms, there's nothing that says you can't go back and forth. And I think that's something that people need to realize. Because I remember when I got my first job, I was like, oh, I'm never going to leave this. This is amazing. Because my parents always struggled with work. And I was like, oh, I'm going to keep this job forever. And then I was like, wait, no, I don't have to. But if you, you know, it's not like if you don't leave people high and dry, and, you know, it, which is not that hard to do. And I agree with you. I think you need to be able to geek out. And I always felt that it was hard to talk to students. And even now, and even some junior artists where I'm just like, what are you watching? What are you doing? I don't know. No time. I'm like, just time. I work all the time and I have time to do X, Y, Z. So whenever anyone says you don't have time, it's just, and it's fine if they don't have time. But what that tells me is that it's not a priority, it's not a passion, which is completely fine. And you can kind of tell. And for me, this is almost year 21. So I know, right? So for me, it's like, I still thoroughly enjoy everything I'm doing just as much. I would say I enjoy it even more now because I'm at this point where you see how things can get put together. And you're going to get to that point too. Like when you get to that 10-year mark, you're going to be like, okay. They'll move more into like lead stuff. You'll be doing less necessary content creation, but you'll be taking this blend. That's why I feel like, because I started teaching around when I was like, maybe like around your age. I started teaching when I was like 24. And it really helps. It helps with you being patient, being able to learn and describe what you're trying to do and to build a team. And then what do you think a lead is? A lead is someone who's just basically like guiding, keeping tabs on, instructing, pushing forward. A lot of those things kind of echo back. And I can see you just looking at you. I can see you naturally turning into lead and down the road, like creative director or something like that, just because of your personal skills, but also because you're passion. And because, you know, and that's something people need to realize, like, especially with CG Spectrum, like all these mentors, it's a choice. We're not twisting their arms. It's a choice for them to, because they all have full-time jobs and lives. So they like what they do so much that they want to, after their long, stressful days, work with students and help them figure things out. Which is awesome if you think about it, to keep up, not only enjoying what you're doing, but to then, after that day of working, work with someone to help them achieve what they want to do. It's pretty cool.
It's kind of like a different mindset for me to jump into because it's almost less stressful with students just because a lot of the students that I have, you know, they're really passionate and they're starting to see what they need to do early. And it's really gratifying to see, you know, students' skill sets grow over the full year that they're here at the program and see like what, you know, at the end of every term, I was have them look back at what they were working on the last, you know, 3 months ago and just see how much progress they've made and all the obstacles that we've overcome together. It's really satisfying. Yeah. And one of the reasons why I took the job was just because I felt like I didn't have a lot of opportunities to do a lot of mentorship to people in general. Like I had some QA friends that I've been trying to push them to get into like an art position or into like a design position, but that's about it. And this is really like a really good opportunity to see how, you know, a mentorship, how mentoring someone actually, you know, operates at a very professional level like we have here.
Now that you've been through the industry and now that you yourself are the mentor slash teacher, has like looking back at how you function as a student, would there be anything that you would have changed being a student, knowing everything you know now from not only working in the industry, but also from what you expect of your students as a mentor instructor?
Yeah, I think even though, you know, thinking back at Tribeca, there was a lot of like issues structurally with the school that we had to go through together. Obviously, we have a whole podcast talking about that, but we won't for now. But like outside of that, I think that one of the things that I failed to do that I would love to go back and kind of work on is working with some of the other great students that we had in the class a little bit more. Because a lot of the times I felt like I was isolating myself from like collaborative efforts from even friends at times. And I wish that I got that opportunity to kind of work with them on projects a little bit more to reach out to other students who may have been struggling and even try to help them as well through the process. I think besides that, you know, I certainly wasn't the perfect student in terms of like collecting feedback and like, you know, things like that. So I think, you know, some of the things that you mentioned a lot really early on at Tribeca was being able to take feedback from anybody in the room and not get take offense to it. And that was something I struggled with really early on, and something that even after I got my first job, I was and Phosphor, I was still apprehensive about, you know, my skill set and things like that.
Why were you? Was it, is it just like, did you feel insecure, or did you think that the other people were wrong? Like,
no, I didn't think anybody was necessarily wrong, especially early on in my career. It was a lot of like just insecurity, you know, just the mental hurdle of, I can't believe I got this job. Am I going to be able to, you know, prove that I should keep it, essentially, right? Because I, obviously the games industry, there's like layoffs constantly at big studios. You don't really know what the context is for people getting laid off. And I just wanted to be someone who could showcase that I have the talents, I can do these things, give me the chance type of thing. But, you know, I go home and be like, oh man, should I push myself harder to finish more of that task today instead of, you know, doing 80% of it and coming back to finish it tomorrow, that type of thing.
Well, I think, and the people are listening, even you, the thing that sucks about the media, which we all know, is that they'll pull on a string that's there. Like, they'll go ahead and then, like, Kotaku or something like that, be like, there's all these reported layoffs and so-and-so, or someone nowadays will go on Twitter. And reality, it's like, you find out that all the people who are let go were on, like, 6 months contracts, and they were supposed to be let go, and they knew they were going to be let go. But it's just always one person that's like, well, this isn't right. I was expecting a full-time job. I'm like, maybe sometimes you do. Maybe sometimes you are literally just hired for that contract, and that happens more than not. And then, you know, there's layoffs that might happen because the studio didn't hit milestones, and you have to hit a milestone in order to get the payday. And most people are aware of that. But, you know, it's that all comes down to the team, the focus, the passion. And that's why a lot of studios, they are so picky when they're hiring people, because when you get hired for that spot, they're hiring and they're putting their trust in you, and they're putting their time and their money in to invest in you, that you will push their product forward and make the studio like stay open. And I think when you're taking feedback and there's this like self-doubt of, should I have finished this task today? It's hard. I think even now, I used to think about that stuff for a long time too. I don't anymore. What I ask myself is like, am I communicating? Am I doing the best thing I can do today? Am I going to have off days? Yeah. But that's why I always pad my hours. If something, I don't flat out say, yeah, I can get this done today. I'm like, yeah, I'll get it done in like 3 or 4 days. And it's, could I get done sooner? Yeah. But you have no idea what other tasks are going to pop up. You have no idea if there's going to be technical issues or if you're going to wake up sick, or just as a creative, I don't know about you, there'll be days, sometimes even weeks, where I just can't focus and I can't get anything done. But then all of a sudden, one day it just clicks and I get everything that I was supposed to get done in a week in a day.
You know, I've had that for sure. That happened even a little bit early on at Airship. There was like about after a month of being on board and doing a lot of some of the tasks to get kind of up to speed with the project, there was like a full week where I was like, I just don't, like, I can't get the, you know, my work to click with what my hands should be doing to like make scripts or levels and whatnot. And then, I came back from the weekend after like just disconnecting and hanging out with friends and doing like a board game night. And I came back and I was like, oh, this all makes sense suddenly. I don't know what changed, but yeah.
It's just taking a step away. Cause I think, you know, if we look at something, if you try to force creativity or problem solving, it's not going to work. And that to me, I've worked at studios where they have these expectations of like these daily things. Like I don't like it. And I've had these expectations of you need to be at your desk X, Y, Z, like this, these hours. And I don't like that because we are not that industry. You cannot impose those types of mandates on creativity and problem solving because it doesn't work like that. You need, like you just said, taking a break, getting fresh air. It's needed. And that's why I'm a big believer of working smart, not hard. Like the amount of hours you work in a day does not dictate how successful your, or like the quality of your work. The longer you work, I think the quality gets worse because you're just not allowing yourself that break.
You know, I think that especially for students who might be listening or watching, and if you're ever having that self-doubt that we've kind of talked about throughout this entire, you know, episode, essentially, you just really need to figure out your own way to overcome it, because I have self-doubt constantly still 7 years into this industry, right? Like something I'm working on isn't fun instantly. I'm like, it's like, it's a natural thing that'll happen when you're doing something highly creative, like you're going to be doing for the rest of your life, potentially. And it's okay to hit that wall and to disconnect and come back a couple hours later, a day later, a week later, whatever you need to overcome that hurdle that you have. I think even when I was in college, you know, on like a 2-year degree, it was super, you know, very fast paced, things like that. Something that I wish I did then too, was just to stop working at home some weeks, some nights, my own personal projects, and just decompress and kind of look at it next week and kind of catch up then. that really is something that I do often when I'm struggling at work or on a personal project or have frustrations. It's just, I'm going to go watch all the Lord of the Rings this weekend for some reason, or, you know, and I'm just going to enjoy, you know, watching that happens.
Extended version. So you have no life.
Exactly. The full weekend is only Lord of the Rings, but, yeah, that's really effective to overcome those problems that you have.
Yeah. I think another thing that makes it hard is that we do live in a very visual, instant gratification world where you can just pop on our station or you can pop on Instagram or any social media and you see someone's work. Right. You're like, God, it's amazing. And you might start to doubt yourself, but you have no idea what their thought process is, how long they worked on that, how many attempts they did. It's easy to beat yourself up or throw your gloves in the air and be like, I can't do this. But I think if you really enjoy something and you really love it, then you're going to keep pushing forward. And I did this in one of my other podcasts. It is like Lord of the Rings. Like, it's not going to be a straight shot to Mordor. There's like the up and downs. You're going to have days where you do nothing. You're going to have days where you get a bunch of stuff done. And if you can embrace that and not really put that pressure to have every day be this insanely got so much done today. Right. It's not how it works. You can't plan that stuff. You got to embrace the days. Like if I feel like I can't do anything that day creatively, cool. That means I'm going to go for a walk, maybe pop open, read some news in the industry, maybe watch a couple tutorials, maybe read a book, watch a movie, stretch, go do some exercise. Then the next day, just allowing my body to kind of like chill, my brain to chill, I get everything I need to get done and faster. And it's to a better quality. It's like, I don't know if I ever made you watch that. It's like the John Cleese, and he was just talking about being open and closed. And if you're closed, where you're just like constantly trying to get the task done and you're stressed and you're the person that just sits with the problem all day and you think the time, like if you work from 12 to 12, like that's going to make it better. No. But if you're open and you're like, I'm going to start it and I'm going to try something. Maybe I'll go for a walk and come back and try something else. You get more done and you feel better about it too.
Let your vigilance slip for one moment and you could find yourself surrounded by happy, enthusiastic and creative people whom you might never be able completely to control ever again. So be careful. Thank you and good night.
Well, where can we find you if people want to like stalk on you and see a pinch of wisdom?
I'm not really active on Twitter these days, but you know, Daniel Pinch 13 is, I'm on there. I've started Twitch streaming recently.
You should call it Pinch Streaming.
Pinch Streaming.
Man, I'm so good lately. God.
It's actually twitch.tv/pinchinator. But in 2020, when the pandemic hit, I had a bunch of free time, obviously from not commuting and going out and having to do all these crazy things. So I started streaming like Unreal on there just to get in the mindset of how do I make games in Unreal again after working at Wargaming for 3 years. So every once in a while, you'll find me there making some random projects. You can come say hi when I'm doing that. Or if I'm playing Apex Legends, you can come tell me how bad I am at it. That too. Either way, you'll find me.
And for anyone that's listening, if you enjoyed what Daniel had to say and you want to see not only him create games live streaming on his Twitch channel, but he want to be your mentor, you can have Daniel be your very own mentor at CG Spectrum. Well, thank you for coming on, and we will talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the CG Spectrum podcast. For more on this episode, visit us at cgspectrum.com/podcast. Check out our show notes where you'll find links to our guests and more behind the scenes. And if you're enjoying the show, please like, rate, review, and subscribe wherever you're listening, or share this episode with someone who might like it. See you next time.